Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des Workaround Podcasts. Ich hatte heute die einmalige Chance, Lara Stein zu treffen. Lara ist aus New York angereist, um morgen am 27. November die Auftaktveranstaltung des Corporate Learning Netzwerks BOMA Germany zu eröffnen. Viel Spaß mit der Folge. Hi Lara.
Hi Jasmine.
Welcome to a new episode of the Workaround Podcast. My name is Jasmin Werner and my guest today is Lara Stein. Lara, nice that you're here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Just in case you didn't know, she is the founder and the former director of TEDx. But Lara also did other great things. Fantastic to meet you today and talk to you today. Lara, my first question, what made you laugh today?
What made me laugh today? Well, I got off a plane at 5 a.m. this morning in Frankfurt and was trying to get through passport control. And there was a technological meltdown where the door malfunctioned and they couldn't get it to open. And I was thinking about how we spend all our time thinking about enabling technology and making the world a better place. And sometimes technology makes things more complicated. And at 5 a.m. it was kind of funny to be stranded in the Frankfurt airport with a door that wouldn't open because of technology.
And you were born in South Africa, right?
Correct.
And currently you're living in New York.
I've been in New York for a long time, yes.
Yeah. Could you give us a quick run through your life, about your past stations? What did you do?
So my background that is most relevant is that I guess 10 years ago, I was recruited by Chris at the TED conference to think about how we could take this very high-touch conference global. And so I started thinking about a structure. I'd been fascinated by the open source movement, by Creative Commons, and started thinking about how could you take a conference model and open it up to the world. And over 6 months, I developed a strategy that eventually became TEDx, which was a free license where anybody in the world could put on a TED-like event as long as they adhered to certain rules and guidelines. And so the first year we had about 250 events around the world, and we now have about 3,000 TEDx events that happen on an annual basis, and the TEDx talks just hit 1 billion views on the YouTube channel. And so what this really showed that you could build a framework, a global network driven by trust that could deliver inspiration on the planet. But along the way, I really became fascinated by, well, how do you take it beyond just the inspiration? And many of the organizers in the network were asking themselves the same question because they were working deep in their communities and wanted to try to figure out how they could really drive this impact at a global scale. And so I left TEDx after 6 years, mainly because I was burnt out, to take a little bit of a break. I was then recruited by Peter Diamandis to think about how I could do the same thing for his organization. And really, the idea was to take what I'd built at TEDx, which was this global community platform, and build on that in a decentralized way where we could also deliver for-profit products in region to deliver both profit and impact. And so I built this decentralized blended model for singularity, but the singularity narrative around technology and how technology is going to solve all mankind's problems didn't really resonate with me. And so I stepped back. And for the last year, I've been working with some key players in my network to think about how do we build a different kind of framework to drive both profit and impact on a global scale.
Thank you. So before we dig deeper in the topics, TEDx and the other topics, I am really interested in your morning routine. How does the first 60 minutes of your day look like? Do you have something like a routine, or does the day start with emails and...
Well, it depends if it's on during the week or on the weekends. I have three kids, so I'm usually up by 6 a.m. and I have to have them out the door by, 7 o'clock. And once they're out the door, I am on email and generally working on, I clear out my inbox and then I focus on putting 2 or 3 hours aside as my quiet thinking time and generally leave the afternoons for meetings.
Mm-hmm. And now let's talk about the TED Talks. How would you explain the success of TED? Can you tell us also a bit more about the history, how it was founded?
So TED was started by a gentleman by the name of Richard Saltwerman. And at the time, this was 30 years ago, he saw TED, the TED platform, as his dinner party for interesting people he knew. And he just really wanted to bring together thought leaders on an annual basis to present some of the really interesting work they were doing in their corporations. And it was really meant to be a dinner party for really interesting people. It was a small event. I actually used to go back in the day. There were about 350 people in a small auditorium in Southern California. About 15 years ago, Chris Anderson took it over. And the first thing that he did was put the TED Talks online. And back in those days, there was very little video online. And so while there weren't a lot of views of the actual TED Talks, what TED was seeing was that people were actually just really emotionally moved by the content and was really resonating with them. And they'd get a lot of emails saying how touched they were by these stories that were being told on this new video platform. And so that was the beginning of exposing what was a small local conference to a global audience. The next step was TED started a series of podcasts and thereafter brought me on board, and I created the framework for what became TEDx. And that really opened up the brand to a huge global movement of individuals around the world that were driven by inspiration.
Can you explain us a bit more about how the TEDx talks come about? So I think it started more as an experiment, right? At the beginning?
Well, at the beginning, the original strategy was to create a television show for TED. And I think, as you know, creating a TV show, especially back in the day, can be quite challenging. And so as an alternative, the decision was made to put the talks online to see how they would do. But again, it was at a moment in time where the video online was just in its nascent state.
At the beginning, you already mentioned that there are now like around about 3,000 TED Talks, right?
So there are 3,000 TEDx events that happen on an annual basis. Yeah. And those TEDx events all happen in deep local communities. It's a free license that is given to an individual to hold a TED-like event. And there are a series of rules and guidelines that the person that takes out the free license has to abide by. And as long as they abide by those rules and guidelines, their license gets renewed. But they have the opportunity to create a TED-like event in their local community. Mm-hmm. And the only one rule that is really significant is that your event has to be relatively small. It has to be under 100 people if you've never been to an actual TED conference. If you've attended a TED conference, which is the main TED event that happens in Vancouver on an annual basis, then you have the ability to host a larger event.
Okay. Do you have some more stats for us? How many countries, how many languages, something like that? Do you have it in your mind?
Well, I think TEDx events happen in about 160 countries around the world at this point. And as I said, the talks that are generated from TEDx have, at the beginning of the year, hit about 1 billion views on the YouTube channel.
Wow, that's amazing. And do you have some lessons learned from the time working at TEDx or from the TED Talks?
Well, there were a lot of lessons, and it depends on what kind of lessons. But I think, you know, we live in a world that is moving more and more towards open, decentralized, blockchain, Burning Man, Maker Faire. So there is this idea that in the future that we're going to be moving towards a more open, decentralized structure for many organizations. The traditional organizational structure right now is optimized very much for a top-down hierarchical efficiency. And there's a lot of tension right now that you're feeling between the top-down hierarchical industrial military complex corporate structure and this open decentralized structure. And I think what TEDx taught me was really how to manage an open, decentralized structure in a way that you're really maximizing the innovation that is happening on the edges while still maintaining a sense of control over what you want your strategy and outcomes to be. And that's a very difficult line to tread. Many organizations at this point want to embrace the crowd. And one of the things I always say to management is you need to define how open you're willing to be and how much risk you're willing to take before I can help you craft a strategy. And because most companies are not comfortable living yet in this world of decentralized uncertainty, although if you can, there are a lot of benefits to being able to embrace the innovation on the edges, the openness, and the decentralization.
There is also a reason that you traveled to Berlin these days, because tomorrow, the 27th of November, there is a kickoff event of BOMA Germany. And in the summer, you co-founded with three more people the international project. It's called BOMA Global, which is more or less a corporate learning network, right?
BOMA is a network of local partners driving change at a global scale. And it's not just about corporate innovation. We really believe that change has to happen across all stakeholders. So it's not just about corporates. But in order to see systems change, we have to bring governments along with us, educational organizations along with us, youth, community. But most certainly, corporates have a key role to play in how do we change the way business happens on this planet and how do we take a more responsible role in driving impact in the longer term on the planet.
Hmm. Which topic is the event dedicated to tomorrow?
BOMA Germany, the event tomorrow, is really dedicated to thinking about leadership and how do we create more courageous leaders that will take us into the future in a world where all these different vectors are coming together. And it's not just, I'm not talking just about technological change, which of course there's a lot of technological change. I'm talking about climate change, social change, geopolitical change. We're at a moment in time where all these very complicated vectors are coming together. At the same time, many companies have to think about how do they re-engineer their workforces, and you layer that on top of how do you drive actual impact on the planet so we can all survive in a world with 9 billion people. And that's a complicated narrative for any corporate to take on. And so tomorrow's conversation is really about how do we think about leadership and how do we think about leadership in the future that can drive positive change for all of us in a world where we are designing the future we want to live in.
Hmm. Can you highlight again why especially the topic leadership is so important nowadays?
Well, leadership is a really important topic at this moment in time. We're living in very complicated times, where because of exponential technologies, we're seeing the speeding up of accelerating technologies like artificial intelligence, robotics, nanotechnology, medicine, and the list goes on. And we, in addition to that, it's not just technological change. We have geopolitical change, we have climate change, we have social change, we have and many of our old institutions that were guiding us in how we make both local and global decisions are not keeping up with this rate of change. And at BOMA, we really believe we have to create a new kind of decentralized network to tackle some of these very complicated problems that are going to be facing us in the future.
What is leadership for you? How would you define that?
Leadership for me is moral courage to think differently and be willing to step out and really lean into a future that may not always be popular initially, but is the right thing to do in order to drive the kind of positive impact we need to see on the planet today.
Tomorrow there will be four focus topics. It's about change, about learning culture, mindset, and purpose. And recently I read something really interesting, and I think it was in a study. Let me just read it out. The average shelf life of a skill is now less than 5 years, and sometimes estimates suggest it is much than 50% of subject knowledge gained during year one of a 4-year technical degree may be outdated by the time a student crosses the stage for graduation. What is your perspective on that?
Yes, so because of the rate of technological change and because of all these different vectors coming together, things are speeding up. at a greater and greater rate. And a lot of what we learn is outdated within a few years, most certainly, of us learning it. And so in order to keep up with this rate of change, we need different kinds of institutions and organizations to help us understand all these vectors coming together in the future, and also how your organization can maximize what the change and leverage the change so that it's helping drive positive impact and revenue. And I think that's a very complicated narrative to make sense of, even if it was moving slowly, and right now it's moving very quickly. And so much of what big corporates have to do, have to think about how do they re-educate and how do they embrace this rate of change and what does that mean to their organization. And if they're able to do that and change the culture to embrace the curiosity and complexity, they will be very successful moving into the future. If they can't, they will stagnate and they will be disrupted, because there are many companies that are embracing the digital narrative and the digital transformational narrative.
I want to dig a bit deeper in the topic learning culture. So I think the most successful organizations are able to efficiently, effectively, and continually upskill and reskill their workforces. How would you define a culture of learning? What is that?
So I think in this day and age, a culture of learning is the willingness to be curious and the willingness to be open and agile, because change is happening at such a rapid rate that if you can't embrace the change and have a mindset of agility, you're not actually going to be able to internalize that and then impact the kind of work you're doing inside of your corporation. So corporations really have to think about this culture of really identifying the real skills inside an individual and how do they bring the best of those skills out, and then how do they give them permission to take risk and be creative, and then how do they retrain them around this idea of the rate of change and what they need to know to be these successful individuals inside a corporation. And I think a lot of the culture of protecting your turf for the sake of staying in a job is so far away from where we're going in this new open, decentralized, agile world. But that cultural transformation from one of protection to one of openness is a very difficult transformation. And so a lot of what BOMA does is give corporates the tools to understand how to get from where they are today to this future where they're embracing curiosity, agility, and the future in a way that they're able to be competitive.
What do you think? What can business leaders do to build a culture of learning? Which measures?
Well, any business is top down. So I think the CEOs have to be courageous. They have to be willing to create a culture and a belief system that is not just about profit for profit's sake, but for profit with impact. And they have to think about the kind of world that they want to live in, and they want their children to live in, and they want their children's children to live in. And they have to think about how they design their corporation to support that future. And what does that look like? You know, I think corporations have been set up, they have a fiduciary responsibility to maximize for profitability. And in the world we're moving into, there's an irresponsibility about only maximizing for profitability and shareholder value. So we have to look at how we think differently about corporations and about leadership inside of corporations, and how we move forward in a more responsible way to deliver both profit and impact on a tiny planet whose resources are limited.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some best practices in mind, just to get a bit more practical?
Well, I have a lot of best practices in mind, but I don't think I want to be that prescriptive in right now. But I encourage you to join one of our BOMA programs, and you will definitely get some of those practices.
Okay, I will do so. okay, then I would say let's switch over to the last questions that are more in a personal way, because the Workaround podcast is not only about the business content, it's also about the people that I'm interviewing. So, and regarding the topic of the Workaround podcast, it's more or less about people and work. So my question for you is, what is work for you?
So I don't really think, I never have thought of work as work. Work is about, I don't even use the word work. My journey in life, I've always wanted to be an interesting journey. And whatever I've done that may give me some kind of monetary reward has to be something I believe in. And so my life is one big journey, and work is just a part of that. And I've always been committed to whatever I've done to make a living, that it's meaningful in some way and it's having positive impact either on other people's lives or on the planet. And that's very important. Especially once I had children, I really felt in order for me to leave my children at home to go to work, my work had to be something that was giving back to the world, and also that I was deriving some kind of personal satisfaction from. And the only way that I could justify going to work was to find a job that really drove positive change in some way, either in people's lives or on the planet.
Mm-hmm. And how do you continue to develop personally? Is there anything that you are learning at the moment what you cannot do yet?
Well, I have an insatiable curiosity, and everything I've done for the last 15 years has been a continuation of lifelong learning. I work for the TED conferences. I went to hundreds of TEDx events a year, and that was all about inspiration and innovation at a local level, and looking at how people in different parts of the world see the world differently and how they are able to come up with ideas that can change the world. I then went to Singularity University, which was a somewhat less deep narrative, but it was about, you know, how does technology change the world, mainly for good. So most jobs that I've had in the last 15 years have been about ongoing learning. And I find that very rewarding because I am constantly growing. I'm constantly learning new things. And now with BOMA, we're creating this decentralized global network of local partners that is going to deliver impact on a local level. And it's also about how do we educate corporations? How do we educate governments differently? How do we identify the local innovation, and how do we give that local innovation a global stage to really drive the positive impact and the change that we want to see on the planet right now? And as I said before, a lot of our big organizations are stagnating because they can't make sense of the accelerating rate of change. They can't make sense of all these different vectors coming together. And so they are unable to drive the kind of decision making we need in this very agile, fast-moving world. And so what we're trying to do here is create a network of individuals that I've met over the last 20 years that really align behind values, that can think about how do we make some of these decisions in a different kind of way, but make them so they are deeply local and global. If we think about where we're going as a global community, this planet is becoming smaller and smaller, even though with this rise of nationalism, there are a lot of opposing forces happening right now. And so a lot of the decisions we're going to have to make are going to be very difficult decisions, big ethical decisions around genetic engineering and whether we should have designer babies, and whether if the U.S. decides, or if I decide I want my child to be a designer baby, well, the woman in the village in Kibera is not going to have access to that kind of technology. And maybe the U.S. decides we shouldn't have access to that kind of technology, but China decides we should. So a lot of the decisions we're going to have to make are going to be deeply local and global. And we're going to need some kind of organization or organizations that understand the complicated vectors at play, but also can think about it from a deeply local and a global level, and bring all this thought leadership into one place to try to make some of these decisions at a global level. And as I said before, a lot of the big organizations that I know are sort of these pre-industrial top-down organizations that aren't agile enough and don't move quickly enough to think about how we really drive this kind of decision-making process. And so with BOMA, it's an emergent global learning network that wants to drive change on a global scale. And we want to keep it agile. We want to keep it open. We want to keep it decentralized. And yet we also are building a series of brain trusts on a country level and a global level that can start to think about some of these more complicated questions and hopefully come up with some both local and global ideas as to where we should be going as humanity.
Hmm. One last question. What topic would you speak about if you were asked to give a TED talk on something outside of your main area of expertise?
Well, for the record, I hate public speaking, so I'm not sure I would. I've always been in the background driving change, and I love building large transformational platforms that think about change and impact. I probably would give a talk on something around that topic. Although you'd really have to twist my arm for me to give a TED talk.
Great. So do you have any requests for my audience or some last parting words?
I think as a global community right now, we are living through some really complicated times. And when I look at some of the values being put forward on the planet right now, I find them deeply concerning. And so what I would say to the audience is think about how and what you're teaching your kids with regards to the way you would like them to live in the future. And also think about your employees, if you have employees, and give them the space to be innovative and be true to who they are so you can bring out the best of them to drive the kind of change we want to see on the planet in a world where we have 9 billion people.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for your time.